Oh yeah, real lifers, citizens of the world, welcome to the Real Life Global Movement, where our mission is to inspire, empower, and connect the world through English.
We believe that English should be a fun and enriching part of your life that you can practice and enjoy whenever and wherever you want. Are you tired of boring lessons that suck the life out of your learning? Are you ready to step up your game and become a kick-ass English speaker?
Well, we're here to guide and inspire you on your journey to true lifelong fluency. It's time to stop just learning English and start living it. Ken again, aw yeah?
Aw yeah! What is going on, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, people from all over the world? This is Chad from Real Life English, where we believe that listening to podcasts is a fun, natural, effective, and
gamified,
or
super duper.
Oh man, that's lame. We said that many times.
Yeah,
come on, man.
creepy,
or even outstanding way to learn English.
Outstanding. That's no better than super duper.
Well, because we've said super duper before.
We have.
Yeah. So here I am, joined in the studio today with my two good buddies, Mr. Justin Murray.
Oh, yeah.
What's up, Justin?
Nothing much. Chilling here.
How are you feeling today?
Pretty good. Yourself?
I'm feeling well. Very fine. What about you, Ethan?
Feeling satisfied.
Satisfied?
Yes.
Okay. All great adjectives. Let's start with outstanding. How would you describe the word outstanding?
Like more than amazing.
More than amazing?
Yeah.
Okay. Any better way to describe outstanding, Justin?
Something that stands out? Phenomenal?
What does to stand out mean? To stand out in a crowd?
It means to be obvious, to be easily, more easily noticeable.
What if you said, "Wow, man, your work really stands out."
Thanks, man.
But it would mean like it's much better and superior than everyone else's work. That's why you can actually see it. It's more obvious, like you said, because it stands out, because it's more noticeable in comparison to the others around you. Much like our podcast, wouldn't you say? Real Life Radio is pretty outstanding. You don't agree? You're nodding. People can't hear you.
They can't hear my nodding? That was a loud nod. It's as loud as the nod gets.
All right. Well, and also, how are you today, Ethan? I didn't ask you.
Satisfied.
Satisfied. Did you say that already?
I did.
Okay.
You weren't listening.
I was not listening. I do that quite often. anyways, we have another jam-packed real-life radio episode for you guys today. I believe it's somewhat of a continuation of last week's podcast, last week's episode, right? Which we talked about
five reasons why 90% of English learners fail.
Okay, so five reasons why 90% fail. That means that today we're talking about
four reasons why, actually, why the best English learners succeed.
Yeah, probably that 10%, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. And before we jump into this, do we need to give them a little bit of a rundown on last week, see if they didn't listen to it, or should we just tell them to go and listen to it?
Go and listen to it.
What's a rundown, though?
A rundown would be a quick summary.
Yeah.
A quick, can you give me the rundown of what happened last week?
Or the lowdown.
Lowdown is a little different there, right?
What would lowdown, what would be the difference between rundown and lowdown?
The lowdown, give me the lowdown.
It's like, give me the information about something, right?
Yeah,
kind
yeah.
Kind of secretive.
Could I guess so.
Secretive.
What about the up-down?
Does that exist?
No, probably not.
What about keep it on the DL, on the down low?
On the down low.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's different than low-down there, right? The down low. What does that mean, Justin?
Keep it on the DL, keep it on the down low means to, it's a secret, just, it's between you and I, don't really talk too much about it.
Yeah. You got anything on the DL right now?
Yeah, today's topic. So guys, this is on the DL. I'm going to share with you four killer, kick-ass aspects of the most kick-ass English learners out there.
killer, kick-ass. Seems like a very, very violent episode.
But we use these words to describe very positive aspects of English runners.
Okay. Killer. So, what does killer mean in this case? You say that was killer.
It's just something that's awesome. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a killer is just somebody who kills or murders. So we're not talking about that.
No. Well, we are going to kill your bad habits, right?
Yep.
Bad learning habits, maybe.
And we're going to kill it, too.
We're going to kill it.
What does it mean to kill it?
Do a great job at something.
Mm-hmm. It's like generally a performance based, right?
Yeah, man, he killed it on that test.
Oh, okay, yeah.
He nailed it.
Mm-hmm. Nailed it, killed it. What does nailed it mean?
It's the same as killed it, so you did a great job.
Yeah. It means you hit it on the mark.
You hit the nail on the head.
Because it's like you take a hammer and you're nailing it in the wall, and so generally you have to hit it very exact, mm-hmm. right, for it to go in the wall.
A nail is the thing you put in the wall to hang things, right?
Yeah. Okay.
Nail could also be my fingernail.
Yeah.
Which is painted. Or Justin's painted today?
No.
Oh, you took it off?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyways. Let's get back on track. So, the first aspect of these killer, kick-ass English learners is that they are self-directed learners.
What is a self-directed learner? Sounds intriguing.
A self-directed learner. Chad, you take it from here.
Okay, Justin. a self-directed learner would be someone who, you know, finds directed means like direction, like their path. Therefore, they are learning in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not limited to what the teacher might be telling them. You know, often I guess we are generally not forced, but somewhat obliged to follow some curriculum. Maybe if you go to an English class or an English school,
I think kind of like coerced even.
Coerced. What does that mean?
Coerced means like you're kind of motivated, but I think in kind of like a negative way. Usually, mm-hmm. So it's kind of like someone coerces you to do something, it's because if you don't do that, there's going to be some consequence.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. So usually people follow these courses, these books, this step-by-step learning, when really maybe you can learn about yourself and maybe there's a lot more you can do to be successful than the schools are telling you.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's not saying that those schools are necessarily bad, it's just that it's their method, it's their way, it's their path, and maybe you, like we talked about the other week, you have your own types of intelligences. Maybe someone's more like rhythmic or kinesthetic, right, or something like that. But in this case, the school is taking their approach, where maybe you would learn a lot faster if you took a different angle or a different approach to your learning direction. And you know, it doesn't, the way that you do it is much different than the school does it.
Well, I would say like a big part of it is being self-directed. It means you having your own motivation, you looking at your own learning, you taking responsibility for it, not placing that responsibility on other people or other programs.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is huge. And a big part of this, the second aspect of that, is blended learning, which means like, you know, the school and the teacher is there to support you, to coach you, but, you know, they're not the center of it.
Mm-hmm. And like not expecting that taking class 2 hours a week is what's going to get you to fluency. It's like you have to work much harder outside of that. Mm-hmm. It's not saying necessarily that all schools are bad. You can learn a lot, but you also have to put in your own work outside of those 2 hours.
And generally, it's like probably a lot more than that, right?
Mm-hmm. Probably at least an hour a day is like the very minimum probably that you could put in if you fluency is your actual goal.
Yeah, and having some good examples in your life of other people who are successful as well. Mm-hmm. And this kind of reminds me of what Ethan was talking about before, this whole idea of 70-20-10. Mm-hmm. What exactly was that, Ethan?
I think the guy's name was, Chris Jenner? Something like that. And he basically, from doing different research, especially I think in like business settings, but people learn basically 70% of our learning comes from experience, 20% comes from sort of like peer-to-peer, so like mentorship or
seeing examples of people who are successful, right?
Yeah, or like a friend like showing you a coworker or something like that. And then 10% is actually like formal learning, so like learning through a classroom, a book, things like that. So schools basically, they teach this 10%, 70 or 80 or 90% of the time, kind of that like teacher to student, one directional, when it really should be the other way around, that the most of the time students should actually be getting their hands dirty.
Getting their hands dirty? Getting down and dirty?
Getting down and dirty. Getting your hands dirty is like actually having experience, you know, not just reading about it, but actually trying it.
Huh.
And what does getting down and dirty mean?
It just means, I don't know, maybe like, I think of it, for example, you know, when I was a kid and I had to get in the garden, because my dad used to make us do like work in the garden, you know.
Okay, I had to do that.
Me too.
I thought of something else.
Very different.
Get down and dirty.
Get your mind out of the gutter. What does get your mind out of the gutter mean? Get your mind out of the gutter?
Get your mind out of the gutter. I would say it means to stop having perverted thoughts. Stop thinking about generally sexual things, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what does gutter mean?
Gutter is like on your... Well, basically, I guess if you have a house, you might have the gutters that go around the roof to catch rain and so it doesn't get stuck on the roof. Or you also have like in the street, there's like kind of these holes where rainwater goes so it doesn't get stuck on the street.
Yeah, it's like this, not a hole. That is a gutter, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
But I mean, I think this comes from that, like, a lot of dirty things get caught in the gutter because it's got sort of a filter. So it'd be kind of like, get your head out of a dirty place.
Okay, so let's get our mind out of the gutter here. But
the gutter, just one last thing about the gutter. It's generally like the I just had a flashback of when I was a little kid and my dad would make me, like, clean the, like, we would rotate, like, different chores between me and my brothers. And the worst one was cleaning the gutter. Because it was just like gunky, crappy stuff in there. And you have to put on like a big glove and like start just cleaning that shit out of there. That's dirty. I always say
gunky?
Shit a lot here.
What's gunky?
Gunky is just kind of like...
gunk.
Gunk would be just a...
It's like the leaves, right? The leaves turn into...
Yeah.
They come together... Oh, they get all wet and they
I think it's when it's wet. It's very moist and very kind of a... It's kind of a word that sounds like how you'd think it would make a sound when you... It's kind of like... Right?
I think it's just that it doesn't necessarily have to be leaves, though. It's just like any sort of like wet, disgusting matter.
That often clogs, right?
Yeah. What is clog?
Clog means to...
It's a Dutch shoe.
That's true too. Clogs are it's a stylish shoe, but
stylish?
As they used to be, right?
Style of it's like Birkenstocks.
Yeah, they're wooden shoes that have a little point at the end.
Anyways, clog, the verb, right? To clog the gutter is it means it gets in the way, right? It starts to block, right?
Yeah. You reckon you can clog your clogs with gunk?
Okay, so the second awesome thing about these kick-ass learners...
Sorry, before we go to the second thing, one last thing I wanted to say about self-directed learning. You should definitely distinguish the difference between that and just, like, fooling around and watching TV shows and calling yourself a self-directed learner, because I think if you wanted to be a self-directed learner, you still have to have, like, the direction.
There is
a path there.
You have to have good strategy. You have to know yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to... really care about your learning.
Mm-hmm. And I think, I'm not sure if this is another point we're going to talk about today, but I think one important aspect of being a self-directed learner is know maybe someone who is more advanced than you and understanding their path and their direction and getting like maybe some guidance from people too. Not even necessarily a teacher, possibly another English learner.
Yeah, I think it could be like a tutor, a friend, an accountability buddy.
Mm-hmm. Accountability buddy.
Yeah.
What is that?
It's like it's to hold someone accountable. I think we've talked about this a lot in the podcast because it's important, but it's basically to make sure someone does what they say they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
So an accountability buddy would be kind of like, especially if it's someone else who's learning, you could both hold each other accountable. And so basically you could like challenge each other and stuff and say like, Chad, like let's both learn 50 new words this month.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of the month, we're actually going to do that. And maybe we even come up with like a system like, whoever learns the most vocabulary this month, like maybe we both put in $50, whoever learns the most vocabulary this month gets that $100.
Mm. Or maybe
strategies.
Yeah, so maybe if you don't do it, you pay extra money or something like this.
Yeah.
And there are lots of there's lots of psychological research showing that if you have a negative consequence around something that you commit to doing, you're much more likely to succeed.
Mm-hmm. And there's like, I would just say here's something we could throw in the show notes, the Try Something New. There's a TED Talk. It's like 5 minutes, just about like 30-day challenges. And basically this is you try something new for 30 days. And then like on top of this, a really good strategy is to have someone hold you accountable. It doesn't necessarily have to be an accountability buddy. I had one student who committed to speak English every single day. And he said his challenge, his accountability was with his mom, that if he missed a day of speaking English, he would have to cook dinner for the family.
So
screw that. Being generous and cooking dinner for your family.
So if you want any accountability partners, if you want to pay us any money or maybe cook us dinner, then we're happy to collaborate. But this is perfect for the second characteristic of these very successful English learners, which is the social aspect of learning. The best, most kick-ass English learners are really good about connecting with people and using it with people, and finding these examples that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, this could be even for example, someone from your English class, right? Maybe out of the class, making those connections online. There are tons of places to do that. The up-and-coming Real Life Global, which will be, depending on when you listen to this podcast, it could be up and live. If not, sign up to our... We'll put a link where you can sign up to get all the news about that in the show notes.
I think maybe people sometimes have a hard time really creating that community aspect, at least from the speaking perspective, with people from their own country. Sometimes it's difficult for people to speak with others from their own country, but we've organized lots of parties here in Brazil, and we've seen Brazilians really adapt to speaking English with each other, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. A little bit of a social lubricant, some engaging activities certainly help.
Yeah, alcohol, yeah.
Yeah.
You want to maybe explain social lubricant?
Yeah, that
case?
Would be... A lubricant is something that helps to make... two thing, what is it?
Hey man, you dug your hole.
What do you mean by you dug your hole, Chad?
You dug your own hole. I mean,
Ethan finds himself in a very difficult spot based upon what he said. He has to define lubricant, right?
Well, you guys have your head in the gutter. I was thinking like lube, like you put in a car, you know, to make different parts of the car not create friction. It's basically, mm-hmm. That's what it does. It prevents friction. So social lubricant is something like normally you have friction, like you have trouble talking to people. Maybe you have trouble talking to an attractive person of the opposite sex. But a couple beers help to like lubricate that situation to make it flow.
To lube and put oil on it, right?
Maybe give a bit of a back massage. But yeah, definitely to take the friction out of the connecting with another person. That can be often... sometimes a little bit of a daunting experience, right?
Yeah.
So just go up and meet someone new.
What is daunting?
Daunting means that it's a little bit scary. You have resistance to doing it because possibly, I mean, in the sense of talking to an attractive member of the opposite sex, which you mentioned just now, maybe you could get rejected and they would show no interest in you. That's why it's kind of daunting.
It's intimidating, right?
Yeah.
And I think especially... even not talking about like flirting or whatever, if you're just talking about speaking, if you have very little experience or no experience speaking in another language, the first couple times that you do it, it can be very daunting, like mm-hmm. Chad said.
And even in your own language.
Yeah, but I'm saying like especially, like even, that's an extra layer of dauntingness.
So if you're speaking with people from your own country, from your own native language... it can be more difficult because you always have your native language to fall back on. You're psychologically programmed to speak with that person in your native language a lot of times, right?
Yeah. Here's a little, for you guys listening at home, something that you can do. Just, if someone that you know speaks English, just go and start talking to them in English. And just maybe try to speak to them for at least 5 minutes. And when they start reverting back to your native language... just keep going and just see what happens.
Or even if they have resistance, like they're like, "Why are you speaking to me in English?" Just keep going.
Yeah. And just totally screw with them and just see how long it takes for them to either to cave in or to maybe start reciprocating and talking with you.
What is screw with someone?
To screw with someone means to kind of like in this case, they want to speak in your native language, but you're screwing around with them means that you kind of playing with them, you're tricking them, maybe.
And what is cave-in?
Wait, was that a good enough explanation of screw around?
So screw around is to play with somebody, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of in a it's got maybe not negative, but it's a little bit like trickster sort of thing, like Jay was saying.
Like, so you're screwing around with me, right? Like,
yeah.
It's not real what you're saying. You're faking it.
It could be tricking me. Joking as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
You're screwing with me.
Exactly.
That's not true.
Yeah, yeah.
So cave in?
And cave in would mean to surrender to some kind of... I'm not so good at the explanation
today. Give in to kind of like...
It's like if...
relinquish your will.
A good example might be...
yeah, but they're very... It's hard to explain it without a more difficult... explanation.
But like a kid in a candy store who's like screaming because he really wants some candy, and his parents finally cave in. They're just like, finally, you can have the candy. Mm-hmm. Even though they don't really want to give their kids sugar.
Okay, so going back there about speaking with people from your country in English, one of the things we've discovered with real life English parties in Belo Horizonte is that some people who meet at our party and speak English, because they develop the habit of speaking English with that other person. So when they actually speak Portuguese with each other, their native language, they're like, oh, wow, it's weird to speak to you in Portuguese.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That is funny.
And so this is really goes against, a lot of people really think that the reason they feel so uncomfortable speaking Portuguese with their friend or speaking English with their friends is because they speak the same native language. But it's just a question of habit a lot of times. And so if you really push past that, you can develop new habits and new perspectives about each relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think there's actually, this is kind of a big topic and something we might go into more detail, but just the whole, there's kind of a misconception with needing to speak to native speakers when, you know, it's a lot more accessible for most people, most of you listening, to find other people, other learners to speak to. And there's even something we were talking about the other day, is that, you know, if you're kind of embarrassed, you're ashamed to speak English, basically on the other side of that, the way that you combat being ashamed of doing something is by talking to someone about it who is who can be empathetic. Is that the right word? Empathetic. Mm-hmm. And so, like, a native speaker, unless they're a teacher or they're also a language learner, they're probably not going to be empathetic. But an English learner who is going through like the same struggle as you, they're going to be completely empathetic. They know exactly the struggles you're having. They felt that same shame before. And so it opens up a lot easier communication to kind of get your feet wet.
Oh, get your feet wet.
Yeah, to try something. To
get used to something, right?
Yeah.
To like dabble in something a little bit.
Oh, dabble. Sounds very British.
You don't say dabble? To dabble in something?
We do. Just sounds
it's
more
kind of like to
British.
Even to test, get your feet wet. It's just kind of like test the water. That's another expression. To put your feet in the water and just see, oh, what is this actually like doing this? Just trying it out before you actually invest into it. I was going to say something else there, but now I've totally lost my train of thought.
When you were dabbling?
Well, you I was about to say something, and then you said get your feet wet, and I forgot, so...
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, we talked about, you know, speaking with people in English from your native language, right? And that's good, but there's that psychological barrier that you can get past, right? But then we come to the global scale, right? When you speak with people from other cultures, and what Ethan was saying there, when you speak with other learners, you get immense empathy from them. You get a lot of empathy from them, and this, really, most people's, one of their biggest fears... But speaking English is the other person judging them for their mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
So that fear goes down. And this is a great bridge to speaking with native speakers.
Yeah.
Bridge in this case means?
Like a transition, right?
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, that's funny because someone who's maybe a native English speaker, but they've already learned a second language, they're definitely more empathetic than, for example, someone who's never learned a language in their life. And sometimes you might say something in English to a native English speaker, generally a more conservative person, and they just, I think we've talked about this before, they speak louder, thinking that's going to help you understand.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Hey, how are you going today? And they start screaming, like, it's not the volume. It's not the volume of your voice, it's how you're saying it, just speak slower, louder.
That would be like, pretty much any older person in the United States, that would be their go-to response to, oh, your English isn't very good. Let me speak slow and loud. But you're still, like, using connected speech and not pronouncing things clearly and all these other, this big jumble of problems.
But going back to...
It's scary as well. Someone's suddenly yelling at you. What the hell's going on, man?
But English as a global language, going back to this final kind of aspect of the need to be very social with your English, is that English... It's a misconception to think that you should only speak with native speakers, or that native speakers are the only way to speak English or to learn English, because English is a global language. There are many more non-natives learning English than there are natives, right?
Yeah. And it's not to say English is in some way superior to other languages. It's just that kind of how things are working out right now. Business, travel, any sort of like intercultural communication, probably at least 90% of the time is done in English.
Yeah, it's the language that connects the world. So,
isn't it Esperanto?
That didn't work out so well.
No, there was some guy I wrote an article about how English can help make you a global citizen. Some guy wrote on there like, "Hey, I don't agree with this. Esperanto is a global language. This is so much more better and technically efficient."
So much more better.
So much more better. So much better, right? And what that
so
guy
so much more better is a grammatical error. If you didn't catch that,
what that guy was missing, what he didn't understand, was that again, like the circumstantial reality of English. It's not better than other languages. It's not more better than other languages. it's just the way the world evolved, and we're at a point where English is the most convenient global language.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it seems like it will probably continue to be this way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, let's hope so.
I don't see us all speaking Chinese too soon, because I think English is already, like, a lot of people say, like, oh, you should learn Chinese because it's going to be really important. But, I mean, even in China, they're investing a ton for the Chinese to learn English so that they can communicate with the rest of the world.
But I'll finish this part of it here with my response when people ask me, well, what happens if Chinese becomes a global language, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say, well, real life Chinese. because really why we're doing this is not because of English. We're doing this because of global citizenship. And this is a really great segue into a really great transition into the next aspect of really awesome English learners' motivation, purpose. Why are you learning English? Take a moment to think about that.
Whoa. My brain has just exploded.
But why we're doing what we're doing, why we're teaching, is exactly that, right? Mm-hmm. It's this whole idea of global citizenship. It's like, and I think really, really motivated learners see the big picture of why, mm-hmm. right? They see that they're much more motivated than just for that job or for, you know, for that certificate. They're much more, they're motivated because there's English opens up to something much greater, which is a global perspective.
Yeah. And I think it takes them a little while to understand that perspective. I think it's hard for people to start learning English because of that, but people kind of perceive that after they've gone through the notions a little bit and learned enough and being able to connect to the world with English, then they have that like paradigm shift, you know?
Yeah.
I think most like people's in it, like just from talking recently, I've been speaking to a lot of English learners and I've been asking these actual questions. A lot of people's motivation at the start is like, I was just really curious. I want, you know, listening to media that's in English and I don't know what they're saying is like, that sounds strange. They wanted mm-hmm. to be so curious. They wanted to understand what that person was saying without having to have the translated subtitles, you know, because everybody knows that that's not very efficient, you know?
Yeah, curiosity is really, really huge. I'm glad you mentioned that.
It also killed the cat.
What?
It also killed the cat.
Curiosity killed the cat?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
You don't know that expression, right?
It sounds familiar, but I don't really know it. What does it mean?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's just a... Maybe it's an Australian thing?
No, we totally have it in the US. It's basically like what you say to kids. You say like, curiosity killed the cat.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like, I think kids so often, they're just like playing with something and they like break it. And it's kind of, they're like, oh, I was just curious. It's like, curiosity killed the cat. It's kind of like a warning.
Mm.
I think because cats, it probably comes because cats are very curious too, and maybe they get themselves killed.
Mm.
Trying to play around with something.
See, that's something wrong with our upbringing, our education. It limits our curiosity and our creativity.
There's actually...
curiosity makes the kick-ass cat.
Yeah. Curiosity makes a kid go.
But here, we're arguing that this is really the beginning of motivation, right? So if you're brought up, if you're raised learning English in a classroom, and it's really boring and it sucks, you're having a hard time with it, probably the best way to short-circuit that is to be curious and look for other ways to experience it. Look for new perspectives on English.
Short-circuit. What does short-circuit mean?
Short-circuit means to... How would you describe that? Maybe to make something stop working? Possibly. Maybe that's not the best definition, but...
Yeah.
It's kind of like to hack, right? A little bit.
To cut the functionality of something, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, they short-circuited the server, and now it's open to everyone all over the world, for example, was it? We would just think of a better explanation, put it in the show notes.
Where are the show notes going to be this time?
They're going to be on the World Wide Web. But sorry, Justin, I did cut you off when you were talking about curiosity there. Did I make you lose your train of thought?
My train of thought?
Yeah.
What does train of thought mean?
It's just the idea that's in your head. It's like whatever you're about to say is like that sequence of ideas that come through your mouth.
You lose your train of thought.
Yeah.
Or you have a brain fart.
Brain fart.
But motivation here really is a very cross-disciplinary subject, right? Mm. It's motivation is has so much to do with your mindset, your attitude, right? Mm. You know, being willing to experience life through English,
mm-hmm.
being willing to have fun with it, and being willing to fail too, right?
Mm-hmm. But I guess no one's motivation is to fail, but I guess just not worrying about failing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, if you can, like, this is what we always say, don't just learn it, live it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, if your motivation is to, like, for example, sometimes if your motivation is to just learn English for your job or to pass a test, it's very limited. You need to be curious. You need to have some kind of a passion-driven purpose.
Eventually, you stop even thinking about it like as a school subject or something you have to learn. And it's just like something you do. Like
mm-hmm.
you read the news in English. You listen to podcasts while you're walking to class or work or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You watch all the TV shows in English. You listen to music in English. And then it's just like it's a complete part of your life. You don't even think about it anymore.
Yeah, it's like a little metaphor about playing the guitar. You know, maybe if you just study, like, for example, you could be a self-directed guitar learner, but, like, it takes a really long time, and it's hard to understand, and you're not very good, but if you learn a little bit of the fundamental aspects, and you can, like, practice for, like, you know, 10, 20, 15 minutes, like, some theory stuff, then you lay down some tunes, and then you can actually play and be very playful.
Well, I would say that is self-directed learning, right?
Totally. Yes. But I'm saying, like, if you have no direction, if you don't really know how to start, how do you make a chord, how do you, you know, scales and stuff like that.
You can't learn to play guitar, though, without getting some blisters on your fingers.
Exactly.
Or breaking some chords.
Yeah, exactly.
Breaking some strings.
Yeah, or sometimes you play out a tune, you know?
Yeah. And
anyway, I'm not sure if that really lines up well, but it's a good metaphor.
Just to make an announcement here in the podcast, like, we're on the fourth now. The fourth aspect of these great English learners is to not just learn it, but to live it, to live your life through English experientially.
Oh, yeah.
And I think there's, like, a lot of good metaphors you can think about, too, that, like, generally the way we think about learning English is, like, I have to study, and eventually, if I do that long enough, I'll be able to speak, but that's completely... I know we talk about this a lot, but it's something that makes no sense, because if you think about probably anything else that you've learned, if it's like be it a sport, you're not going to learn to play soccer by like reading about it. You're not going to learn to juggle by like reading about it. It's like you have to kick a ball or you have to throw some balls in the air and like be willing to let them drop to
mm-hmm.
actually like learn how to play any sort of these things. And the same thing with guitar, you have to be willing to actually play some notes wrong and get blisters on your finger. It's a little bit painful experience.
Yeah, you gotta fondle a few balls to be a good soccer player.
That was actually another... This podcast is becoming R-rated.
Well, now that it's unedited, and now we always had these little jokes, but we never used to share them with the world, right? Fondle means to grab in your hand, right?
To cup.
To cup, yeah. But maybe in the future, in the probably not so distant future, I mean, we talked about the future of education a few weeks ago, but maybe to learn soccer, you don't even have to leave your house because you can do it virtually through virtual reality.
Mm.
Become a virtual reality soccer star.
I could see that being very, you need like a big room or something, or else you're going to be like kicking things around your house accidentally.
this is one of the challenges of virtual reality, actually.
It's
really trying to, because you have to have like the physical space around you and the environment you're using, and that has to be aligned with the virtual world.
Yeah, you'd hate to like be trying to catch a Pokemon and accidentally jump out the window, you know?
Yeah, it's true.
But the beautiful thing about English is like you can sit at a table with somebody, right, in the virtual world, and have a conversation with somebody from across the world.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You could actually have a beer with someone, you know, right from the comfort of your own home.
Yeah.
And you just glimpsed the future for Life English.
Oh, yeah. What's a glimpse?
To have a look, like a quick look.
Mm-hmm. Right? Sneak peek.
Yeah.
What is sneak a peek or sneak peek?
A peek, again, is like a little look, like he's peeking, he's looking, but secretively. And a sneak peek makes it sound even more secretively, because to sneak is to move without anybody noticing you.
Yeah.
So he had to take a sneak peek. Yeah, last night, by the way, I took a sneak talking about future of education, just future in general. I saw this really cool documentary. I got a sneak peek at this documentary because it's going to be launched only in August in the United States. It's called Disruptors, and it's about design thinking, the future of design, and disruptive design, I should say. Really cool.
And what's to disrupt something?
Disrupt is to...
disrupt class?
Disrupt class. Is that the same? Is that like interrupt, though? Interrupt class? Uh-huh. Well, I guess disrupt, if you're kind of like loud and you're being a class clown, you might be disrupting class.
He's very disruptive.
Yeah.
He's calling all the attention of everyone because he's making such a loud noise and they're no longer focused on the teacher.
I got that in my report card sometimes.
Disruptive.
You were a disruptive student?
Sometimes,
were you jumping on top of the tables and acting like a monkey or something?
I'm sorry, Chad. I think I interrupted you here. Can you...
You're so disruptive, man.
Did you lose your train of thought?
I didn't. I think I'd finished my train of thought. The train had arrived at the station already.
But what does like disrupt mean as far in this case? Because it's not really something.
Oh yeah,
in
this
case, negative.
Yeah, like disruptive design and entrepreneurship and stuff like that. It's just talking about these disruptive companies, or even like a disruptive design where it just like totally changes the way everybody does
it's things. Innovative, right? Because you have the status quo or the way that things are, and then a new company comes in and innovates and it disrupts the
kind
market.
It changes the way that everyone like views something or does something.
So it has a very positive connotation in the sense of innovation, right?
Yeah.
True.
So I think it's a good time to maybe just wind down, right?
Wind down, yeah.
And
what
so
does wind down mean?
Wind down means to finish something kind of slowly, right?
Yeah.
Quickly.
Wind is the verb, like when you like twist, like you know those old clocks where you have to like wind them, and like wind
like
it
toy.
Up.
Like
toy,
those
yeah.
monkeys with the what do you call those?
Those symbols.
The symbols. Yeah,
yeah. yeah.
So four ways that you can disrupt your English learning habits, and become a kick-ass English learner are: one, self-directed learning. Mr. V, what is it?
Self-directed learning. Number two?
Number one, self-directed learning.
Oh, what is self-directed learning?
Yeah.
It's basically like learning that you kind of choose yourself, you choose your own direction.
Yep, and learning through experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
Two, making it social.
Connecting with other people, peers, trying to learn as much and use, in this case, English learning, use it as much as you can. Like I said, a challenge, find another English learner that you know, a friend or whatever, just start speaking English and just freak that person out. And don't revert back to your native language. Test yourself. You have to be bold if you want to be a successful English learner, right?
And what do you mean by freak out?
Freak out means like they get a little bit scared. Like, what the hell is going on here, man?
Yeah.
Why are you speaking to me in English? You can't do this.
So find friends to support your learning. Find mentors. Find people locally. Find people internationally. And yeah, rock it. And the third thing, kick-ass learners have motivation. they have motivation in many ways. They find it. They're curious, right? They're creative with their learning.
Mm-hmm. They don't believe that curiosity killed the cat and made the cat kick ass.
Exactly. They turned the cat into a kick-ass killer cat.
And finally, the final point is they don't just learn English, they live it. They live it through their lives. They live English.
They don't think of it as a boring school subject.
Everything they do is, in some sense, use not everything possibly, but a lot of what they do professionally, personally, their projects move forward with English, right? Mm-hmm.
And every one of those 10% of successful English learners, speakers, and just kick-ass real-lifers all listen to Real Life Radio, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right. That was not a synchronized oh, yeah. 1, 2, 3.
Oh, yeah.
So, I think we're going to play you guys out today with on the topic of motivation and being curious. Curiosity is one thing that you need to drive your English learning success, your fluency. And we're going to play you out with a little, very quick, 2-minute part of a motivational speech by Les Brown. You guys know who that is?
I do not.
Well, you guys are in for a treat, because he talks about, the name of this talk is to stay hungry. What does hungry mean in this case?
It's to have like a deep craving to learn.
Yeah.
I think it's the same way that Steve Jobs used it in a really good commencement speech at Stanford, I believe.
That is correct. Yeah. Awesome speech. But yeah, this is Les Brown. He's a really cool dude. I think you guys are going to really like it. If you want to hear more of his stuff, just type in Les Brown into Google. It's LESBROWN.
Oh, yeah.
And if you want to hear, if you want to see the show notes of this podcast and you're not listening from our website, obviously go to our website. It's reallifeglobal.com. Or you can go straight to this podcast, which is reallifeglobal.com/...
Self-directed?
Self-dash meaning hyphen, right?
Yeah.
Self-directed with the hyphen in the middle.
So SELF hyphen DIRECTED.
Nice. Awesome, guys. So thanks a lot for joining us today. And like always, you'll hear from us next week on Real
Life
Radio.
1, 2, 3.
Oh, yeah.
You gotta be hungry. People that are hungry are willing to do the things today others won't do in order to have the things tomorrow others won't have. People that are hungry believe, always strive to get on top in life because it's the bottom that's overcrowded. People that are hungry know if you want to be successful, you must be willing to do the things today others won't do in order to have the things tomorrow others won't have. I didn't do what I'm doing right now because it was hard. How many of you decided not to do something because it was hard? Raise your hands, please. I want you to write this down. If you do what is easy, your life will be hard. Complain, point at your circumstances, give up your power, blame the government, blame the economy. If you do what is easy, your life will be hard. But if you do what is hard, your life will be easy. It's hard to make a radical change in your behavior. It's hard to take ownership. It's hard to swallow the bitter pill that wherever you find yourself, at some point in time, you made an appointment to be there. That's hard.